system and at our southern border. This should not and shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. It's something that we have and have seen and should have seen coming for a long time. These challenges have been evolving for more than a decade, almost 15 years. This challenge has grown, and it has gotten worse over time. Not surprisingly, the increased weaponization of this issue in the political sphere, the unwillingness or the inability of Congress to step in to play its congressionally mandated role to control the immigration system, and the limited authority and sometimes misuse of executive authority over immigration has made the problem worse, not better. So we have some experts here to talk about that. We have Congressman Greg Stanton to talk about what this looks like from the congressional perspective, from his perch. And then Greg Chen from AILA and Dara Lind from the American Immigration Council. Congressman Stanton's been gracious enough to find time in his schedule to do this, so I will reserve introductions of Greg and Dara till afterwards and introduce Congressman Stanton, who I know has seen this issue from many, many different angles. He currently serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee and Western Hemisphere Subcommittee, where he is focused on tackling global migration, combating drug trafficking, and encouraging nearshoring, particularly of the semiconductor supply chain. He has seen this from the perspective of just a really dedicated legislative actor. He is on the New Democratic Coalition, a caucus of 100 pro-business House Democrats, and he is the chair of the Immigration and Border Security Task Force, who introduced their border and immigration reform framework very recently, something that I hope all of you have had a chance to see. It is some really good work. He's also seen this issue from a local perspective. He served as mayor of Phoenix, where he worked to improve the city's export economy. In that role, he did a lot of work to repair relationships with Mexico after the Arizona State Legislature passed SB 1070, the Show Me Your Papers law. By working with the Arizona Chamber, the Hispanic Chamber, and countless others in the business community, and by leading dozens of trade delegations to Mexico. So, Greg, thank you for all of that work and for your broad and deep understanding of this issue. Let me just turn to you, and maybe you could offer your perspective of sort of where you see us now. The part of the reason for this conversation in terms of the timing is the, in the absence of congressional action, the expectation that the executive branch will be again taking actions to exercise their authority to try to alleviate this. So give us your perspective of where this is and what whether Congress is going to do anything and what the president should be doing.
All right, Ben, thanks for that kind introduction. What he failed to mention is that he and I have been friends for 20, I don't know, I guess 6 years at this point. Ben is from Arizona, and we worked on political campaigns together. We happen to be on the same side of the aisle, so we worked on campaigns of many incredible candidates that lost in Arizona. Ben, the world has changed. Arizona is now a purple state, so we got a fighting chance to win some of those campaigns. So a lot has changed in Arizona. One thing that hasn't changed, unfortunately, is immigration and border security as an issue that is at the forefront of politics, attempted to be used as a political cudgel by some, as opposed to people really wanting to roll up their sleeves and find solutions. And we've had so many missed opportunities over the years that if we actually had come together in a bipartisan way and found solutions, we'd be so much better off today than where we currently are. And so, you know, as long as you and I have known each other, this issue unfortunately remains. And you and I are going to work together as long as it takes to finally get a comprehensive solution that supports people and supports the American economy and restores operational control at the border. I am a third-term member of Congress from Arizona. I am a moderate Democrat. Before this role, I did serve as mayor of the city of Phoenix for 2 terms, and I served for a few years as deputy attorney general in the state of Arizona when this was also a hot issue back then as well. So I have been in public life in Arizona for a long period of time, and I can say with certainty, this isn't a new crisis. It is so much the result of decades of partisan mudslinging and broken down, failed deals. Many before me have tried to reach across the aisle and find compromise. our friends in the Senate just earlier this year, the Gang of Eight and giants like Senator John McCain before them. None of us on this call are naive. We know how difficult this is, especially now. But now I still believe that there is an opportunity to pass meaningful, bipartisan immigration and border security bill through Congress, one that does address the crisis at our southern border and finally fixes our deeply broken, outdated immigration system in a way that really lifts up our American economy. It is not one or the other. We can do both. And in fact, we have to do both. In Congress, I do serve in the New Democrat Coalition's Border Security and Immigration Task Force. I'm the chair of that important committee. At the beginning of this year, we did release our framework for immigration reform and border security, developed after many months and countless conversations with members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, immigration experts, including the leaders at AILA and business community leaders. And that plan is as such. First and foremost, we need to secure the southern border once and for all. If we don't, cartels will continue to traffic deadly drugs like fentanyl and exploit vulnerable immigrants. In every conversation I've had with border officials in Arizona, their biggest concern is lack of funding. So our framework does call for significant increases in hiring and retaining customs and border protection agents and officers, and investing in modern technology and infrastructure, and an increase in Border Patrol officials. That's step one. But in order for the U.S. to stay economically competitive on a global stage, to win the competition, the economic competition with China, and to take full advantage of the investments Congress has made in the semiconductor, green energy, and infrastructure, we also have to reform our broken and outdated immigration system. It hasn't been updated since the 1990s. Since before the internet was invented. We're not equipped to keep pace with the labor needs of our modern economy. Over the last few years, we've seen historic job growth, but across critical sectors of the American economy, from agriculture to healthcare to small business, there aren't enough workers to fill those positions. So our framework calls for streamlining the process for highly skilled and highly educated workers to come and stay in the United States, build businesses that create jobs for Americans. We should be actively working to attract the most brilliant minds from around the world and contribute here in the United States. Other nations certainly are. The United States needs to get in that game in order to win this important economic competition. Our framework calls for reforming our worker visa system to meet labor market demands in critical industries like agriculture and healthcare. And it calls for taking action to protect more than 500,000 dreamers in our country, a top priority for this country's biggest employers. It's not just the right thing to do, it is such an economically smart thing to do as well. Now, this framework for the new Dems, we're about 100 strong on the Democratic side. We're the kind of the pro-business caucus, as was mentioned. I jokingly call us the raging moderates of Congress trying to get things done. This framework is a starting point. It is really a hand extended, if you will, to our Republican friends who will maybe begin to get serious about reaching a compromise and getting something, anything done. Our Democratic coalition is ready and willing to work with Republicans to do the right thing for this country, restore operational control at the border, and do smart immigration policy that lifts up the American economy. Last month, I led a bipartisan delegation down to the border and across the border into Mexico. For my fellow lawmakers in the House, there is no substitute for going directly to the border yourself, talking to the women and men of the Border Patrol, local government leaders, nonprofits, and business and workers on both sides of the border that benefit from efficient trade, to see just how urgent it is that Congress come together to get something done. Unfortunately, for too many in Washington, the border is simply a talking point, a cudgel to hit your opponents with. Ben, as you and I were talking earlier, we see that again, even in Arizona, where initiative is going to be on the ballot, maybe on the ballot. They're attempting to put on the ballot to create such a divisive issue, again, akin to SB 1070. You saw it with the non-movement of the Senate bipartisan bill because of concerns about political candidates at the presidential level trying to utilize this as a cudgel and not wanting actual solutions to happen. With too many Republicans playing politics on border security, I do believe that there is work that President Biden can do at the border to help restore important order. I know it's going to be a discussion of today, the right way to go about that, the proper and legal way to go about that as well. But ultimately, there is no substitute for congressional action, a real investment of resources, and meaningful legislation to reform our broken immigration system. That remains my North Star. And we need more members that are willing to work in good faith across the aisle in a spirit of true compromise to finally get something done. Thank you for letting me participate in this important press event. And I look forward to hearing the dialogue. And I know I have to leave in just a minute for an important event here at the Tempe Library where I'm sitting right now on housing. So I can't stay on too long, but I'm looking forward to hear others' comments. Thank you.
I appreciate that, Craig. Thank you very much. I hope your optimism bears fruit because the ability to meet the challenges that we face in our immigration system, including the challenges at the southern border, become incredibly difficult if Congress continues its intent to starve the system and to play politics with this issue. Meeting this challenge without adequate funding, without the investment of resources in the infrastructure, the broader immigration infrastructure that will allow us to handle these cases, that's going to be a really, really tall order. And while the executive branch has significant authority at its disposal, it's limited in terms of the targets and the ability to impact the kinds of things, the important steps that you're talking about there, Greg, which is opening up new channels of legal immigration. Biden administration has done some work to simulate that kind of impact, but to be able to create real legal channels of immigration to provide options other than the southern border without congressional action becomes incredibly difficult. Nevertheless, we are at a critical moment, and it seems that the executive branch is going to take further action in the days or weeks ahead. So we want to talk a little bit about what that would look like. Greg Chen, in particular, going to talk about some of the solutions that are available for an effective management of the border and beyond. And then Dara is going to dig into further information about what 212F authority would do and what important questions reporters should be asking about the exercise of executive authority. So Greg, let me turn to you. Greg is a senior director, government relations here at AILA. He's been with us, I don't know, forever and a day, almost 15 years now, Greg, but he has also seen this issue from many different angles. He was formerly with the Lutheran Immigration Refugee Service and the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants, an experience that has turned out to be very valuable given the nature of the challenges that we face today. And Dara, let me do a quick introduction of you so that we just turn to you when you get there. Dara is a senior fellow at the American Immigration Council, where she works to help the public better understand immigration policy with written resources, public engagement, and the guidance of colleagues' efforts to ensure the council's experts have the greatest possible impact. Most of us know Dara, although you've done amazing work at the council, but was one of the most trusted and respected immigration reporters in the country on this issue and many other issues at Vox, ProPublica. So she has brought a lot of that really powerful experience and perspective to help bring some light to an issue that is filled mostly with heat. So Greg, let me turn to you and talk a little bit about what we expect, what we see as viable solutions, and then Dara will turn to you on how to think about this from a reporter's perspective.
Thank you, Ben. Glad to have all the reporters that we have on the call today. And yes, it has been almost 15 years at AILA, but let it be known I'm not a day over the age of 30. And that will be maybe the only untruthful thing I say on this call. Hopefully the rest will all be truth and accurate. So building upon what the congressman was saying a moment ago and also what Ben was saying, AILA certainly recognizes the importance right now of having smart solutions to fix our immigration system. There is so much attention right now being paid, rightfully so, at the need to have an effective system to manage the U.S. southern border in particular. And I'm going to give a little bit of detail for what AILA thinks and has been recommending to both Congress and the executive branch for what kinds of actions can be taken in that space. First of all, I will say resourcing. Resourcing Department of Homeland Security and other agencies that do immigration reform or do immigration services is a critical step, and Congress has to come together and make sure to fund those agencies properly. The kind of fights we've been having, partisan fights in Congress that hold up the funding, that have made it so difficult for the agencies to get that funding, that is a major problem that is making it more difficult for those agencies to get done what they need. Some specifics here, and we can start with making sure the ports of entry are adequately resourced. That means both more CBP officers to screen people coming in, and also more infrastructure, both pedestrian and vehicular lanes, just to make sure the volume of traffic coming in for businesses purposes, tourist purposes, or if it's for humanitarian screening. That should be an obvious one. Nobody should ever be disagreeing about that in Congress. Another one is law enforcement to stop serious threats to public safety, particularly right now. People are aware of narcotics smuggling, fentanyl. And I know the congressman's own, the New Democrats Coalition platform emphasizes this point very much. So we're certainly in agreement on that front, the need for that kind of attention and greater resourcing toward that kind of law enforcement targeting. Other aspects that are important would be simply making sure that migrants that are coming to the border can be processed both efficiently, but also fairly. And the first step there is to make sure that other agencies within DHS, particularly USCIS, which is the agency that has the asylum officers, that there are more asylum officers to handle these cases to do them quickly. Similarly, courts need more resourcing so that the backlogs that you hear about that take cases so long to wend their way through the process. If courts were better resourced, asylum officers were better resourced, you wouldn't have these situations where people are waiting for months or years now for their case to be determined. That is not only unfair to the person who needs to be able to move on with their life and know, am I going to be safe in this country? And also, it makes it difficult to manage the system effectively because people stay here and don't have that kind of resolution. The other thing I'll just mention in terms of overall resourcing needs is to make sure that we are working with our foreign country governments, Mexico and others, to ensure that there are other legal pathways to bring people here. And also so those countries can effectively process people coming in. We know the Mexican government is already doing a great deal on this front. We are also, through Biden's parole initiatives for various countries, have found ways to bring more people to come into the United States through an established channel so they don't have to make the dangerous journey to the southern border. This is something that the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alan Marcus, has spoken very forcefully about. That is critical to making sure that our borders don't have high volume coming. And it's already been shown for several of the populations under the Cuban, Haitian, Nicaraguan, and Venezuelan programs that it has actually reduced people in those populations coming to the U.S. But I'm going to stop there with a full stop and say that we cannot make the border an effective managed system without going beyond the border. And by that, I mean beyond the border in terms of where else we look. Effective migration requires solutions that also address the entire immigration system using an all of government approach. I'll keep my comments in this regard brief, but just to make sure that people understand, we need more legal pathways for people who have been living in the country for years and contributing to the country, but still don't have a way to gain lawful status. Many of those people who are long residents in our country are contributing here, and yet they are still undocumented. That continues to be a problem for our overall system. That makes it less effective, less orderly in our overall immigration system, and it does impact border issues. Similarly, we need, and businesses are asking for this across the country, we need more visas to bring people into the country for employment-based reasons, as foreign workers, and also to help reunite families. Congress, by and large, needs to come together. As the congressman and Ben were already saying a moment ago, they need to come together in a bipartisan way to make these solutions happen. But until that happens, the president can also take action on all these fronts, including having an effective border management system, but also the president can take interim steps to provide more legal pathways for people that are new arrivals, including for people coming as foreign workers, but also he can take steps to help make sure that people who are undocumented living here for years can have some way to have their status be more regularized, even if it's not a permanent status, or to be able to work lawfully. Those are interim measures, and we would encourage the president to do that. Polls show that Americans want smart solutions to these issues. And those smart solutions include these kind of broad and balanced approaches. The last topic that I'll talk about here is what we are hearing in the press that's been reported the president is contemplating use of his executive authority to add new policy that would add restrictions for people that are entering at the border, possibly to block or expel migrants that are coming in. The details are still unclear at this point. There's been some reporting that if numbers of people entering at the border, the apprehension levels reach a certain level, that could then function as a trigger numerically for the president then to restrict access to asylum, meaning that if the numbers hit a certain level and then you came in between ports of entry after the trigger was affected, that you wouldn't be able to seek asylum at that point. AILA is waiting to see what that will look like. 212F is the president's authority to use this kind of power to limit entries if it's seen from his viewpoint as being a detriment to the U.S. interests. What he will need to balance, and what I think his lawyers have been working on, is to balance that with the other U.S. law under asylum, which guarantees access to asylum for people that are coming in. And he's going to need to find a way to do that, to restrict entry that doesn't at the same time block asylum seekers from having that fair access. And that's what AILA is going to be looking at. And that's what we recommend, that as press reporters, you ask those questions. What is going to be limiting here for asylum seekers, and whether the new rule will do that, that the president puts forth. I'm going to stop there and pass it back to Ben or to Dara.
Dara, why don't you take it from there to get a little bit more on that, on those issues.
Great. Thank you, Ben and Representative Stanton and Greg. So it can seem like we've been having two parallel conversations, right? This conversation about what we would like to see at the border, whether that's, you know, through Congress and through the president. And then there's this other conversation about what we anticipate might be coming in the coming weeks. And I understand that there's, you know, a lot of understandable interest in the latter right now. And so what I want to kind of show you guys is that to talk responsibly and like informatively about what the president's going to do, we need to be having conversations that get into these bigger issues of what would a solution at the border actually look like. The first thing that you have to understand in terms of, you know, a 212F proclamation, which as far as we can tell is what, you know, is the mechanism that would be used, is that, and I'm gonna state the obvious here, but it often seems like elected officials don't get this, and it often seems like it doesn't come through in reports. If Biden says, "I've done this thing, it closes the border," and Republicans say, "No, it doesn't close the border," that is not, in fact, the end of the discussion about what it does, right? And it's not going to mean that there's like a sign being put up that says, "By the way, Biden says you can't come now," and people will comply. So what this actually looks like on the ground becomes really important. There are a couple of very different things that have happened in the last several years that could be precursors to this. One is the way that then President Trump in 2018 very few people recall this, but in 2018 in October, President Trump put up a 212F proclamation that barred the entry of anybody between ports of entry, and said that, you know, and banned asylum seekers in that way. The way that actually worked in practice was that everybody who crossed and was subject to that ban was still able to ask for relief under US law, under these kind of lesser forms of relief called withholding of removal and withholding of removal under the Convention Against Torture. So in practice, what that meant was they were still being sent to an interview with an asylum officer who was still supposed to do a screening interview. It was just a screening interview for what was at the time a different standard. That screening interview phase is exactly what the Biden administration has been focusing on for the last year in terms of trying to kind of tighten the asylum process. It raised the standard substantially last year with a regulation. It just added another kind of set of screeners earlier in the process. Because there are so few asylum officers relative to the number of people coming in, as Greg was saying, we're looking already at a very small fraction of people even getting screening interviews. And so in a world where that's the mechanism, the impact on immediate, you know, whatever we're looking at to determine, like, is there a change at the border, whether that's immediate crossing numbers, whether that's the number of people who are, you know, coming to cities like New York and Chicago, whether that's you know, the kind of the like what effects that has on housing in other cities that have been doing their best to accommodate people who want to work and can't. You know, that would be a fairly minimal impact on that side, regardless of the kind of, you know, legal questions involved. The other model would be under Title 42, especially as it was originally implemented under the Trump administration, under which if you asked for asylum or said you feared persecution, you would still be expelled back to Mexico. The only exception to that would be under the initial guidance that if you spontaneously expressed a fear of torture and the Border Patrol agent who was processing you decided that you were doing so credibly, then you could be referred. That's a very, very, very different standard in terms of who can actually get referred. And while we expect that there's going to be a lot of discretion built into this, and frankly, the 212F proclamation itself probably won't give a whole lot of details, there's a really important role for reporters to play, both in asking, are, which of these is it? Is it something in between? What does this actually look like? And in communicating that to the public so that we don't have this expectation that either crossings are going to go down to zero or, you know, this hasn't changed anything at all. The other thing that this really highlights is that it's a question of what Mexico has agreed to, will agree to, will support. As people who have been covering this for a while know, you can't just refuse to, you know, in practice, expelling people means you're sending people who are in the US back to another country. And usually just for convenience reasons, that has to be Mexico if you're not going to detain them for days to weeks. So how many people in Mexico has agreed to take, of what nationalities, and, you know, where they, like where it's agreeing to take them is going to be very relevant in determining what this actually looks like on the ground, which is in turn going to be relevant for assessing whether it meets the expressed aims of the Biden administration or whether it, and whether it addresses the real pain points that communities are seeing. And that's kind of the last major point I wanted to make, is that we need to be looking at this in terms of not just does it do what Biden says, does it close the border or not, does it reduce crossings or not. I think that given the timing, we've often seen a reduction in border numbers over the course of the summer. And so it's entirely plausible that numbers will go down in the weeks after this is announced. It's also entirely plausible that counterfactually, they would have gone down even if it wasn't. And it's also true that in general, what we've seen is that a crackdown results in a short-term reduction that lasts a few months, but no more. And so it's entirely plausible that something that results in a reduction now won't lead to reductions all the way through November. But even beyond that, we do need to be thinking about what are the actual pain points that have been revealed in the system over the last 2 years? And what is, if the administration's actions are reducing the number of people who are released into the US, is it also using that opportunity to take some breathing room to build a more resilient system for next time? Is it doing more to try to coordinate with cities? Is it doing more to staff up asylum officers and to figure out, you know, how to process people quickly without causing for a bottleneck and overcrowded border facilities? Those are really, really important questions for the next time numbers go up. And they're also the things that in general, it would be a little more helpful for the public to be thinking about when they think about whether the border is fixed or not, because that's what's really going to result in having an efficient system that can give people decisions in a reasonable amount of time. And I'll give it back to Ben and to folks for questions.
Excellent. Thank you. Belle, we want to open this up for questions.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have a question, please feel free to raise your hand, or if you prefer to share it in writing, feel free to write it in the chat.
While they contemplate questions, I want to make just two quick observations, which is the thing about expulsion authority. I think it is almost impossible to say that pushing the problem 100 yards south of the border is actually solving the problem. Creating a reservoir of inhumanity as cartels prey on folks that may be stuck 100 yards to the south of our border is not solving the problem. And that if the only thing that we focus on is the border, then we're basically just playing Red Rover with thousands and thousands of immigrants. And until we think about beyond the border to provide solutions, whether they are solutions related to refugees and resettlement issues or employment issues. It is a reality that many of these folks that are coming seeking for asylum are actually economic refugees and not eligible. Matching up that need with that demand with the need that we have in the United States is just a huge missed opportunity. It is the most impactful thing that we could do to address the border crisis is to have lines forming in consulates back home to unite with families or to get employment opportunities instead of forming lines at the southern border. But that's going to require us to, again, end this game of Red Rover and daring people to come to the southern border. My 2 cents.
Does anybody have a question? They'd like to raise their hand and unmute themselves.
All right, that's my tolerance level with awkward silence. I thank you all for participating. I think, Belle, they have questions that they didn't want to ask here. They can contact you. Is that correct?
That is absolutely right, Ben. Either George Tamaris or myself, I'm happy to help coordinate any kind of interviews you might need with our policy experts.
Ben, could I make, or Belle, could I make one other point, which is just to point the reporters here to a couple of resources. One, which Belle and George may have already sent to the reporters, is a new policy brief that just came out last week that AILA issued called Solutions for the Border in America's Immigration System, which provides more detail for the kinds of solutions that AILA thinks could be workable. And then something that's forthcoming is a policy brief that we'll either publish on Friday or Monday that will lay out the law and the policy around this statute 212F that we've been referencing. That is what we anticipate the president would use to base a border expulsion type authority on. So we'll make sure that that gets out to this group as soon as it's out. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Belle, do you have final instructions or words?
No. I'll just be sharing the audio recording as soon as it's available. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.